brother.
What's up?
This is a Cuban party, man.
Yeah, brother, dig it.
Stop it.
Right on.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah.
Time now for the Empowerment Hour, the hottest show on Saturday mornings in Jacksonville on Praise 107.9. And now, here's your host on the Empowerment Hour, Dr. Richard Danforth, president of the Jacksonville Urban League, Jarman Leitner, president of First Thursday, and the producer and host, W. Larry Williams, CEO of Anchor Multicultural Communications Company.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Empowerment Hour. This is your host, Larry Williams, along with my co-host, Jarman Leitner, president of Harvest Mental Health Services in Jacksonville. Our other co-host, Dr. Richard Danforth, president of Jacksonville Urban League, is taking a well-earned vacation day today and won't be with us. But we're going to move on and try to do the best we can in filling in for Doc. Hey, Jarman, good morning and happy Saturday morning.
Yes.
This is great, isn't it? Pre-recording our show and being able to sit back and listen to it on Saturday mornings is a marvelous thing. But I want to welcome all our listeners and also bring Jarman in to we're going to have a discussion in the first segment this morning talking about what's going on in Jacksonville.
Yes. Good morning, Larry. Good morning to our listeners. Just excited again to share and to talk about what's going on. And we know that returning to schools is still a big topic. It's still a concern as things are worked out with this transition back to the brick and mortar or virtual or homeschool. And I know this has been a busy week for us over in Clay County with both of our children being at home and teaching them. It has been hectic. It has been a juggle. So I want to encourage parents, you know, to do your best and to hang in there, to provide our children with what we need and make the best of this situation. But I know we'll get a little bit more into what's going on with DCPS later on with our education contributor, Daryl Willie.
Okay. And Jarman, as we talk about the return to school and you know, each day we see something and hear something different coming from the governor or the state education commissioner or state health departments and so forth about the numbers of positive cases of coronavirus cases in Florida and in the state of Florida and in Duval County, Jacksonville. You know, and it's kind of disturbing to me that I'm reading this morning that the governor is asking the state, the schools, the colleges, not to report their positive case numbers, and you know that without running them through the State Department of Health. You know, if the schools are recording those numbers, why can't there be transparency in that reporting? What is there to hide? If there's nothing to hide, why don't we have total transparency of where these numbers are, who these young people are that are infected with this virus, and how they might be spreading it to others unknowingly?
Absolutely. And that is a concern for many parents. I've heard parents say, well, we're sending our children back the first 9 weeks, and then we're going to monitor where the numbers are. And if the numbers aren't being reported, then they can't really make an accurate decision based on, you know, what's being presented. So it is a disservice, you know, to the community to not be honest about the numbers. And I don't understand what the process is. The article didn't report what the process is when it comes to reporting it to the Florida Department of Health. And then what happens after that? So does the Department of Health...
You know, this administration has never been transparent about the COVID numbers, and it seems to play off of what is happening in the leadership of the country, where as that, you know, we've started backing off on testing to improve the numbers. Fewer cases, fewer positive tests bodes well for these current administrators and administration. But does it, you know, it's disingenuous to the parents and the students and the teachers that are having to go into these schools themselves and not knowing what to expect and not knowing whether my peer over here has the virus and can deliver it to me. It's disconcerting. And what they're doing is creating an erosion of trust, you know, amongst the parents and the students. Without this transparency, folks are wondering, okay, why? What are we hiding? Why are we hiding these numbers when it's so simple that you, if someone tests, you record it and you report it, so that the next set of people that have been in contact with that individual knows that they need to get tested. But I guess if you want to cut down on testing, then you wouldn't follow those guidelines.
Right, and Larry, I know that on one of our shows we did talk about what that process would look like if a student or a teacher was positive, showed up positive in the public school or even at the university level. But now that has changed. Now that the school is actually open and up and running, we're getting different orders. And so it's like, we're not going to report that, because they had a process laid out for if there were positive cases that came up so that they would be able to respond accordingly. So I would be concern if my children were going back to brick and mortar and to hear that those numbers aren't being reported accurately. I would have to ask administration, leaders, someone at the school or someone at the district to give me clarification on how I'm going to know when cases have been, or when someone has been exposed, or if my child has been exposed.
Yeah. And gentlemen, this one of the other topics we're going to talk about this morning is another unarmed black man that was shot and almost killed by police officers in Wisconsin, in I think it's Kenosha. And, you know, we're you know, again, I mean, how many times do we have to have this dialogue? I mean, it's almost becoming a weekly deal here during this presidential election period, and I blame it all on that, because I think that's where the divisiveness starts, you know, from the top, and it's filtering down. It's even to the point now where armed young white men are going through the streets and shooting and murdering black folks. I mean, what is this world coming to? And then when we oppose it through our rallies and so forth, peaceful rallies, then, you know, we're shot and killed or tased and whatever else they can do that is it may be legally proper, but definitely morally wrong.
Yes, absolutely. I know that there was a picture that surfaced, and again, I don't know whether it's accurate or not. I just know the picture surfaced on Facebook of the young white male that was in custody from that shot, you know, a couple of people, and the police officer was giving him water, you know, treating him with human dignity. You know, he was thirsty, so he was able to get water from the police officer who arrested him. Yet we have this recent incident with Jacob Blake that was shot in the back 7 times, you know, and he wasn't even armed and hadn't committed a crime. And then, of course, we know, again, the George Floyd case and all the cases that have happened. And we know there is a rally that is going on, or that on Friday led by Al Sharpton, to speak out about what's going on, because people are fed up, they're tired, and it's time for.
And it's, we're going to talk about more of this in the next segment, but John, the professional sports, all of professional sports took another pause yesterday, led by the NBA Milwaukee Bucks, who boycotted their game Wednesday night because of this deal, and therefore forcing the other teams in the NBA to halt their playoffs or pause their playoff games as well. So, you know, we're going to talk about that, and we're going to also talk about JEA and the billion-dollar payout that for those management bonuses that would have been distributed had that sale gone through. And we're going to talk about Axe Handle Saturday. So get ready, y'all, and after this musical selection, we'll be back with some more. What's happening in Jacksonville?
The new Praise 107.9, the ultimate gospel experience. The ultimate gospel experience.
I cannot explain it. This may not make sense. I know what it looks like, but I choose to go against that. And I'm speaking something different. I'm speaking something different. Claiming something different, expecting something different, say.
I cannot explain it, this may not make sense.
I know
what it looks like, but I choose to go
and I'm speaking
that. And I'm speaking something different.
I'm speaking
something different.
I'm claiming
something different.
Find somebody near you
something
and tell
different.
Them this, listen.
Praise him,
cause
I believe.
Yeah, come on, say, I don't have to wait.
I don't have to wait.
Good morning and welcome back to the Empowerment Hour. This is Larry Williams with Jarman Leitner, and Dr. Danford is traveling this today, and so we'll catch up with him next week. But we have a special guest on this morning, and one of our contributors, Dr. Tammy Holdo, who is I call it an inclusion lady. So she knows all about that stuff, you know. So if you guys want to know anything about inclusion and things of that nature, implicit bias, all those type of things, Dr. Holdo is the lady you need to be talking to. Good morning, Dr. Holdo, and welcome to back to the Empowerment Hour.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Jaimin.
Good morning.
Dr. Holdo, we've been having discussions about the schools reopening, the transparency and lack thereof from the governors and powers that be, especially Department of Health, and the reporting of COVID positive cases. And that led us into talking about the another pause in something that to us is much more critical. If you can believe that COVID would be second on the list of things that are affecting our community right now. But the professional sports took a pause for another almost murder, but protesting the ongoing murdering of Black men across the U.S. And this time, Jacob Blake, who was shot 7 times in the back and miraculously lived and survived to tell his own story. And I'm sure that wasn't the intent of the officer who fired 7 shots into his back, that he would live. But at the same time, as the story starts to unravel and folks start putting their spins on it, again, we're having the victim, characterized, as the assailant. This is about the craziest stuff that you can hear. But Jacob Blake, again, was shot 7 times in the back. I'm sure you've seen the video now. What are your thoughts on that?
So I have to say I'm from Wisconsin. I am from Milwaukee, the third most segregated metropolitan statistical area in America, Kenosha. Is only about 30 minutes, 40 minutes outside of Milwaukee. They have a population of about 100,000, 77% of them being Caucasian, with 10% being African American. I see that Jacob Blake is being, we see the victim being blamed for what happened to him. We have seen Kyle Rittenhouse, who was there apparently with the militia to protect property at the ripe age of 17, carrying that assault rifle, was able to murder 2 people and injure another and make it all the way home back to Illinois to sleep in his own bed that night. So I'm just amazed. I'm also amazed by their chief of police who proceeded to blame the victims who were murdered and the one that was hurt in reference to them not abiding by the 8 p.m. curfew that he put in place. And I see calls for his resignation, but I didn't really see him discuss anything about his officers as they held the t-shirt of Jacob Blake and shot him 7 times at point blank range in the back.
And we still haven't heard anything from the police department there or the powers that be about that shooting. And it's appalling, Jarman, that this young man from Kenosha can come in and walk through the police lines carrying a weapon an assault style weapon into a crowd that was definitely Black, and he walks right into that crowd. They're looking for opportunities to kill or maim as many people as you can. Why would you be carrying an assault style rifle? And why would the police allow someone? Well, we know the answer to this question, but I'll ask him. Why would the police allow someone with that weapon to walk through them, give them a bottle of water on the way through, and then let them go back through their line to get wherever his mom to the car to take him back home? His mom drove him there and back. She should be charged as well.
Right. Because he's a minor. Yes, absolutely. And I just kind of want to speak to the emotional side of this. You know, the NBA players, they are protesting or boycotting because it's emotional for them. So, you know, right now as a community, African-American community, mothers are responding to the trauma of this because this is trauma. We're seeing this happen on live TV, happening to real people. This is not a TV show. This is not a movie or Hollywood. This is actually happening in real life. People are losing their lives, and we're watching it right before our eyes, and knowing that there are African American males that are being targeted. And I know that I've heard from mothers who just are worried. They're concerned. They don't want to live in fear, but they're feeling it because they have teenagers that are going out and they're wondering whether they're going to come back home. Tammy, I heard you say you have a tracker for your son who's off in college, not because you don't trust him, but because you don't trust other people and what may happen to him. He could possibly get pulled over, you know? And so you're, as a concerned parent, you have that put in place for safety reasons. So I just think,
go ahead. John, and both of you guys have young Black boys and men that you are raising, and you know, I think it would be appropriate for you to just, you know, speak from your heart what your feelings are. Tammy, your son is off to college. I mean, you know, I can't even imagine that number one, that my child would be away from me during this period, but to be away and during this not only the pandemic, but the pandemic from racism.
Yeah. Well, I have to share with you first that my husband and I are both service-connected disabled veterans. So what that means to me is we wrote a blank check to this country, and we were willing to die and fight for this country. And I have to put a tracker on my son, who is African-American, because I'm fearful for his life, whether it be with a vigilante, a police officer, or anyone else, just because of the mere fact of the beautiful complexion of his skin. That's a problem in itself. You know, I see so many people talk this good game about how patriotical they are and this and that. They've never served this country. You know, but my grandparent did, or my father did. Don't talk to me unless you have. And at this point, you know, I'm a very, I guess, disgruntled disabled veteran, because it's not right. You know, we've done everything that we possibly can to show and support our country. This is our country. And I should not have to worry that my son, who just turned 18, you know, will not be treated equitable by anybody just for the mere fact of his beautiful melanin skin. It's ridiculous. It's not right. And things have got to change. And people, you see this going on, and you see the difference. To me, when Kyle Rittenhouse was able to walk through and walk back to the car and go back to Illinois, I mean, that if you don't see the difference and the disparity in the treatment, then you obviously don't want to see it.
Right. You don't want to see it. You don't want to admit the truth that is happening, and that change needs to take place now. You know, we want to live. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, everyone has to accept a responsibility and accountability for their own actions. But regardless of that situation with Jacob Blake, there was no way that you can say that these officers could have felt their lives were in harm's way. You know, that there was no way when someone is turning away from you and not, you know, walking away from you, you know, looking, and you know, we don't know what he was looking or opening the door for. Maybe it was to check on his kids who were in the car, by the way.
Right. You
know, his young Black sons, again, you know, this is the emotional turmoil that we're experiencing every day in America. And as Doc Rivers so pointedly pointed out, you know, we love America, but America is not loving us back.
Right.
And with that, we're going to take a break and come back to the Empowerment Hour with Jarman Leitner and Tammy and perhaps Dr. Hodel. And perhaps our education contributor. This is Larry Williams. We'll be back after this musical selection.
and another long week I have to face. So many problems I have to solve, so much going on. It seems like there is never enough money to do all the things that I have to do. I sit down and I wonder how I'm gonna make it. What am I gonna do?
Look to the hills. From whence comes my help? All of my help coming from the Lord. It's gonna get better for me. It's gonna get better.
Sharp pain in my body. Lord, what is this? What is it now? I've got to go down to see my doctor. Got to see what's going on. I can't afford to get sick. It's not the right time. Oh, please, not now, Lord. So many depending on me. What am I gonna do? I'm gonna look to the hills. From
Empowerment Hour, everybody. Happy day. It's a great day in Jacksonville and beyond. We're going to talk. We've been talking a lot about the recent what's going on in Jacksonville and around the country. And we're going to bring it back home to Jacksonville and talk about the students returning to school. And we're going to probably get more into this in the next segment. But Jarman and Dr. Holdo, what's going on with this truancy deal? As of Wednesday, the district said nearly 9,700 students who were expected to attend classes haven't shown up. And at the same deal, the parents are saying, we're trying to get our students enrolled into the Duval homeroom. But they're saying that there's no capacity. And the parent is saying, I don't want to send my child to a brick and mortar. Why don't we have enough capacity in the homeroom, which is a virtual school system set up especially for this purpose?
Correct. That's a question that I would like to know the answer to as well, Larry, because I've spoken with some teachers in the Duval County school system, and they've reported that there's no cap. There's no cap if you are a virtual teacher. So you could have more than 20 to 30 students or even more than that if they don't put a cap on it. Again, that was just the information that was shared with me. That could be different now. That could have changed. But there are parents who have been waitlisted for Duval homeroom, and they're wondering, why can't their child get into Duval homeroom, and they don't want to send them to brick and mortar? So what happens to that student whose parent wants them on the online platform but can't get in, and they don't want to send them to brick and mortar for learning? Are they considered truant? So that,
well, according to the Duval DCPS, that yes, they are considered truant, and I guess they've expended a lot of resources to go out and try to find these students who were quote unquote absent, and. You know, it just befuddles my mind that you set up a virtual system, and these parents saying that they can't enroll their students into the Duval Virtual Instruction Academy, and at the same time, their children are being listed as truant. So truancy is not something that's good. That's, first of all, let's start with that.
Okay, right.
Truant means that you're absent without leave, Dr. Holdo.
Right.
So my question was that, you know, are these students, if they're not in their seats or online, are they absent? And yes, the answer is yes. And can these students be punished aside from just, you know, being, you know, sent to the principal's office? In most states, you can be arrested for not attending classes, and especially if you miss those, 7 to 10 times that you'll be, adjudicated in some type of way. So this, every time I hear this and I hear myself saying it, and I'm thinking about all these young black men already in prison. COVID has taken over the prisons, and those young men have been infected. They're going to come back and bring this back to the community whenever they get out. It's just a mind-boggling thing. So, you know, help me out. What is the truant deal? Why are parents being forced, that the children being forced into possible adjudicated situations when it's not necessary?
Right, absolutely. And are those students who, my question, Larry and Tammy, are those students who are having challenges with the virtual? You know, is that going to go against them as being an unexcused absence because they had internet issues or, you know, any kind of computer challenges? You know, are they going to be considered truant as well if that continues to happen? And how can the school district decipher the difference between those students who are just saying, I'm not going to do it, to those who are just experiencing challenges? So it just sounds like there are a lot of things that still need to be worked through. Again, at the onset of school returning this fall, a lot of kinks that still need to be worked out. And, as a community, we need to seek those answers. So we're encouraging parents, ask the school district, ask the principals at your school, put your questions out there and get the answers that you need so that our students are still prepared, because ultimately missing school, the student is suffering academically.
Yes. Okay?
They continue to get behind the more they miss school. So it's about the student, and we need to make sure that they're getting their education and they're safe.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, you can pin it and spin it any type of way that you want. But these kids need to be in school. They need to be, you know, receiving a proper education. And every parent, I can't think of any parent that doesn't want their child enrolled in school and their in their seats, whether it's virtual or in person. But, you know, we can't just stick our heads in the sand and say that, you know, with this COVID deal, that is safe for them to be there. And the school district isn't being transparent enough for me to say, to give me the comfort of saying that, hey, I'm comfortable sending my child into this environment in person. No, I'm not.
Right, right. And if we look at the numbers that are being reported, it looks great on the surface. You know, the numbers are down. The positive cases are down about 3,000 in the last report.
That's because we stopped testing.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the threshold for testing. And,
right.
And I don't care what you say, less testing does not mean fewer cases. It just means fewer people realizing that they have the virus and the potential to spreading it to others who don't.
So Larry, on top of less testing, then it's less reporting as well. So
less testing means less, you know, we're going to have fewer cases. And that's that, you know, that comes from the White House on down. We want fewer tests and, you know, fewer tests so that we look better on the national, on the international stage about the numbers of COVID tests that are positive. And to me, I don't give a darn about what people think over in Russia or China or wherever. I think about our health here in America, you know, and especially to marginalized populations like Blacks and Hispanics and Native Americans who don't have and always have been disproportionately affected health wise. So naturally, we're the ones who are out there in the schools. We're the ones who are the essential workers, et cetera, that are being exposed. And basically, because of our need to work and support our families, we have no choice but to go to work. And I think that's one of the major things that is being overlooked in this whole scenario by the governor, the president, and anybody else who's anti face mask, and social distancing, and providing a safe environment for our kids, whether it's in the schools, on the buses, or in the classrooms. You know, we have to do a better job of taking care of our kids and our parents and our teachers. I mean, you know, they're on the front lines as well. And I see that, you know, one of the teachers who had a Black Lives Matter poster in her virtual classroom at mm-hmm. her home was called out on social media for that. And the teacher was suspended.
Wow.
She was reinstated yesterday, but she was suspended. You know, what type of morality is that? This is this. I mean, you know, so what you reinstated me because of the public outcry, but the fact that we're acquiescing to any one single parent who's objecting to what's going on here in America, and you know, when I see that, you know, it just sends chills down my spine and reminds me that even though I was fighting 50 years ago for the same deal, that is America hasn't changed, and we keep going back to this thing. You know, we love America, but America isn't loving us back. And we're going to be back after this music break and talk more about the truancy and other things that are happening, Axe Handle Saturday and other things that are happening here in Jacksonville. This is Praise 107.9 FM, the Empowerment Hour.
The ultimate gospel experience, the new Praise 107.9.
Listen, I know we're out of recording, but can we make this our sanctuary tonight? I want you to think about that thing, and I want you to look at somebody. As a matter of fact, grab the hand of the person you're standing next to and lift your hand in the air. That's it, lift your hand in the air. I don't know what the enemy has been using against you to keep you from being what God wants you to be, but I came to tell somebody that that's about to change. I speak to everything that's been holding you captive, and I command it to let you go, to let you go. Lift your voice and say, God is changing our stuff. Put your hands all over the room and say,
this won't be my story no more.
That thing that's been keeping you up at night won't be,
this won't be my story no more.
Having just enough just to get by won't be,
this won't be my story no more.
God came in to pull you where you belong, oh yes he did,
this won't be my story no more.
God came to break you out of some stuff tonight, oh yes he did,
this won't be my story.
I don't care how He came to break you out tonight. Hey, he came to break you out tonight. Yeah, he came to break you out tonight. Lift your hands all over this room. And if don't nobody else get it, get it for your home tonight. As your hands are lifted up high, I need you out of your own mouth to begin to shout in the atmosphere. God is changing my scope. Open your mouth and shout it like you, shout it like you. You want me to say, you want me to say, he's turning that thing around. He's turning it. Somebody open your mouth. Oh, oh no, that won't be your story no more. Everybody say, lift your hands and say, this won't be my. One more time, like you mean it. This won't be. Now you ought to open your mouth and bless him like you believe that he's not going to change your story, but it's already changed. I need somebody to open up your mouth and get what is yours tonight. I said, get what is yours.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to the Empowerment Hour.
Leaving my spirit.
My co-host, John Leitner. Dr. Danford is on vacation today, and well deserved vacation. And but we're going to move on, and today we've been talking about Duval Public Schools and the challenges that they're experiencing over there. And we have with us our education contributor, school board, Duval County School Board member, Daryl Willie. Hey, Daryl. Happy day. How you doing?
Hello, hello. Good morning, everybody. How's everybody doing on this Empowerment Hour?
All right. We're doing great.
Doing good.
We're just a little perplexed about the homeroom schools and the truancy thing that's prevalent right now with the kids being absent from classes. And we understand that there's like 11,000 kids that were unaccounted for in this first round of checks, and that those students, the missing students, were expected to be in online learning capacities or at the school physically. What's going on with that? And
How are we addressing those absenteeisms?
Yeah, that's a great question, and we are monitoring that closely. And usually at the beginning of the year, you have a number of students that you're trying to track down. They get in of move populations and move from to different cities. But this year it's more folks than ever before. We knew it was going to be that case because you got COVID, you got people either trying to do homeroom, trying to do in person. But I tell you what, the schools are working diligently every day. Like they have a automated system that they use for phones to try to contact people if those numbers are working to try to call them. And then you actually have folks who are on the ground now, both staff from the schools, and also we have some great partners like Communities and Schools and others who are actually going out into neighborhoods and actually knocking doors and trying to find out where students are. So we're doing a lot of different sort of processes in place to try and ensure we do it. And at this point, it's also a community thing because we have to also make sure, I know I'm putting on my Facebook and blasting on social media, hey, if you have kids that are out there and they're not in school, maybe you didn't sign up, you forgot to sign up, or you thought you were supposed to be over here, just let us know so we can support that. So, but it is probably priority number one of the main priorities right now is to make sure we know where people are. And we can talk about the 10-day count and other things, because that's also a part of one of the reasons why we need to make sure we get those numbers.
Okay, so Daryl, as far as the Duval homeroom, is there a wait list? We have a parent that's concerned about her child getting into Duval homeroom, and it's been reported to her that there's a wait list. So is there a wait list for the Duval homeroom?
Yeah, it really depends on what school you're assigned to. So some schools have a higher population of students on Duval homeroom. So for example, if you have a school that has 60% Duval homeroom and you have a certain number of teachers assigned to that, there's also a cap on how many students can be in that teacher's class. So what they're trying to do is ensure that student has a place. Unfortunately, you do have some parents who are in this sort of holding pattern, but hopefully that should be done either now or throughout this weekend and really wrap that up. But you also, but you have to make sure that you're letting us know what's going on with you. Because a lot of times what I found is I've talked to parents and they thought they were waiting, but their focus and their teams was already set up. And I said, go check your teams, make sure. Because a lot of times, a lot of this big system, they're trying to push people into different spots. So first thing I tell them to do, check your focus, then check your teams, especially if you were on last year. Because if you're on teams, they'll automatically start to update that.
Okay, so there is a cap on the virtual classroom, though. Because at one point, teachers were under the impression that there wasn't a cap on the virtual class, but there is.
Well, I'll say this. There's a cap for that, but they're still trying to make room. So what they'll do is you may not end up at a Duval homeroom assigned to that school. So they may have to sort of outsource and say, hey, there's room in this class with this elementary school that's two blocks over, or your other neighborhood elementary school. So you might get put over there. They're trying to avoid that because if we open back up and then you have to go back to your brick and mortar school, there may be gaps in learning because you may be on a different, not a hugely different pace, but a different pace based on who your teacher is. So there is a holding pattern, but we're trying to accommodate as many people as possible in those Duval homeroom classroom slots.
I'm still trying to figure out that since it's a virtual homeroom, is there a need for a cap there for those students, especially if looking at the future plans for, you know, eventually going back into live classroom settings? Isn't there something else that can be done to accommodate those students and parents? Apparently not.
Yeah, I mean, many of the parents, honestly, are, we found that most of them are finding their groove. It is, there's a small amount of folks who sign up for Duval homeroom, then sign up for the application late. So they have to be pulled from their school and put in. And there's the cap because, honestly, I'm looking at virtual even for my daughter. If you have 20 people in that classroom and you're trying to monitor them all on screens, plus you still have to check their work, you still have to check all their, do the grades and do all the other stuff. So it can't just be 100 people in the class, which I've had people ask me, why can't you just have as many people? Because you still have to monitor and you still want that engagement. Yeah. So But we're really trying to accommodate, and hopefully folks, if they're still having issues, email us over at the board. You can email me directly, Willie D at Duval Schools, and we'll try to get you to the right spot. We did have a lot of folks stop by the one-stop shop earlier this week to kind of get help. So we're trying to accommodate as much as possible.
Give them your email address again, because they're emailing us, and we can't do anything to help.
Yeah. Have them email Willie D, WILLIED, at DuvalSchools.org, and we'll try to get them to the right spot. And if you email me with what you've done thus far. And I would say before emailing, check your teams and your focus to see, because you may not get that email that says, hey, you're all set up now, go here, go there. It may be that that's going to come later, but you may already be set up in that virtual environment.
Okay. And Darryl, how does truancy work, you know, in the school system in Duval? If a student is absent one time or two times, when do they start appearing into punishment level for being truant?
Yeah, in a normal school year, you'd have a couple of days before you get onto a list, and then you start to get a lot of the different sort of truancy emails, people coming to your house and those sorts of things. In this environment, we're trying to hold folks a bit harmless because we know it's just a lot of craziness going on with COVID. So we're trying to just give people the benefit of the doubt. But after a certain amount of time, we have to ensure too that we report numbers in order for funding. So part of it is we want folks to be in there and to start the year off right, to make it seamless. But two, it starts to affect funding around 10, 12 days. And we moved our 10-day count to a 12-day count this year because we knew it's going to be a little bit harder to track people down and ensure that we know where everybody is.
And if those students aren't in place and at that particular time period, what happens?
I mean, we'll exhaust all of our options. So, I mean, we'll exhaust the phone calls, the emails, the in-person. At a certain point, we just have to add them to the list of folks that we just can't find. I doubt that's going to happen. I mean, we're seeing thousands and thousands every single day come back on, and we're identifying them. Because at the first day of school, there was, you know, it was in the tens of thousands, and now it's down underneath that. So, I mean, we are tracking students down pretty regularly. And a lot of folks, honestly, which is kind of wild to me, just don't even realize when school starts. So we're just reminding them also that school starts before Labor Day, because some folks are in the mind of, oh, it starts in Labor Day. So we're just kind of capturing all of as many students as we can.
Yeah. And they can't be accounted for. So what is the punishment? Can they be arrested and taken to detention? You know, what's the next level?
There are some legal sort of pieces to it. If you have a student that you're responsible for that's not in school, I don't know exactly the protocol there. I mean, hopefully we don't have to get there. You do with certain groups and parents, but hopefully we don't get there in mass numbers. We don't want to make it a punishment thing and a punitive thing in this environment. But there's a certain point where it gets egregious. If we've called a number of times, if we knocked on your door and they're just, We're trying to do all we can to make it easy. So you have options. We can get the technology to you. But there's always going to be a few that are going to be harder to track down.
Okay. Well, Darryl, thank you for hopping on this morning.
No problem.
Dr. Hodo, appreciate you always hopping on. Jamin, what's that email address for our listeners to send their questions and requests to?
Yes, that email address is jacksempowermenthour@gmail.com. So you can email us with any questions or any comments. And we always want to listen. We always want to hear from our listeners and our small business owners, African-American owned businesses that are still open. We want to know that you're here and that you're progressing.
Yes, we're still here. And thanks, everybody, for listening again. This is Larry Williams, along with Jarman Leitner, Darryl Willey, Dr. Hodo, and Dr. Danford is absent. Thank you, Roger, in the background. We'll see you next Saturday morning, 8 a.m. This is the Empowerment Hour.